Okay, well, welcome, Dan. Thanks very much for joining us. This is our second episode. Anyone who hasn't watched the first episode, please go to YouTube or Apple Podcasts and check us out.
Or Spotify.
Or Spotify. Thank you, Alex. So, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me as well. I'm particularly honoured to do the second episode of what is destined to be a very prestigious and hopefully world-renowned podcast.
Yeah, so you can come again.
Thank you very much. thank you for the invite. Really great to be here.
No problem. And thank you, CG Optic, and this time Lek, who provided the refreshments. So appreciate that from our sponsors. So thank you very much. So we're going to kick off with the question that we ask every guest, or we will, and we have so far, which is, what is sustainability to you?
Thank you. Well, so it's a good question, and actually quite a tricky one. I think when you think about sustainability, I like to talk about it in terms of the word itself. So the word itself is made up of the word sustain, right? If you think about what does sustain mean, it means keeping something, I guess, the same for a long period of time, right? So if we look about sustainability, whether it's within the way we live or the environment, it's about keeping something that we've got at the moment as good as it is for a long period of time so that it doesn't deteriorate in any way. So if we look at the environment, how can we keep that the same? The temperature in the earth, how can we keep that the same? And so, yeah, for me, it's about how do we, I guess, stop reducing the quality of what we have at the moment and keep things at least the same, or if we can, obviously improve the world that we live in.
Yeah, so it's kind of like do no harm. Basically.
Exactly, yeah, do no harm.
Yeah.
And hopefully do better as well.
Yeah. Excellent, that's a really good answer. Huh?
Yeah, good answer. What do you think the scale of the problem is in laboratories?
Yes, I guess you've kind of hit the nail on the head. I haven't spent a lot of time there yet, right? I was in a laboratory today before I came here, and I think I can bring up an example of the kind of craziness that I'm seeing. And this particular laboratory, what they were doing is they had all their hazardous waste. They were putting it into an autoclave. Then after they'd done that, they were putting it into an autoclave. They were putting it back into a plastic container and sending that plastic container out just to be incinerated. Now, there's no need for that to go into a plastic container. It can go into a plastic bag, go into a bio bin. It can go into any other vessel. That plastic container is, you know, it probably weighs 1 to 2 kilograms worth of plastic that is just being used to incinerate for no reason. And so, you know, and every time I go into a laboratory, they're always doing some kind of crazy thing where you think, well, you can simplify that, or you can make that easier, or use less plastic, or use alternatives. But a lot of it is about awareness and people not knowing what the alternatives are, or, you know, a lot of it is also about willingness to change. It's that battle against how do you get people out of their mindset of, well, we've done this for, you know, 20-30 years, why would we change? You know, it works, so let's not you know, bother. And I think that's where the big challenge is. You know, the scale of the problem in terms of the amount of plastic that's produced, obviously that's very large, and I can only go off what I'm hearing from other people, having not spent a lot of time actually doing the work in the labs. But judging by the amount of new sustainable solutions I've seen, the amount of you know, accreditations that there are, the amount of initiatives around, you know, freezer temperatures and whatever else, the scale of the problem is quite big. And I think people are also now becoming much more aware of it.
I think people need to be incentivized more than anything else, because it's not their problem. I'm here to do this experiment. I'm here to get the results. This is the stuff I need to use. Finish with that.
Interesting. I guess it depends on the person. Because I would argue that actually, you know, your family, your kids' kids, and what the world is that they might be brought up in is incentive enough for them to actually want to do something small about it. And if you let, okay, it may seem in your very small lab space, okay, you know, I'm actually, oh, it's just one little bit of plastic or whatever. But think about the millions of scientists there are across the world. If every single one of them did the same thing, that's a million grams or whatever it is of plastic that they're just throwing away. And so, you know, I would argue that, you know, we should always try and do our best to, you know, for the environment. And that should be your incentive, is what your future generations may the world that they may grow up in.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a good point. I guess you'd be more sort of familiar with the healthcare world, maybe, because you're, I mean, there's lots of clues what we're going to talk about later on
in
your product, but you probably putting a lot of your solution into the healthcare world as well. Do you see a bigger scale problem in healthcare, or is it similar to labs?
Similar. I mean, the lab that I was in was in a hospital, right?
Okay.
So,
okay.
I mean, it wasn't a private lab or anything like that. Yeah. So it's similar. And, you know, there's also the element of cost saving as well, right? Where there's waste, the stuff that you've paid for that you're throwing away.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to try and reduce it to save the money as well. Everyone knows that NHS is in big trouble. All these companies are struggling now to, you know, make ends meet, to make profit, all this kind of stuff. And so where you can reduce waste and reduce wastage, you know, it's a really easy change to make and all this stuff. And yeah, there is a lot of focus on it, understandably.
Absolutely. We were at a private hospital last week and it was heaving. It was absolutely packed.
Yeah.
And we asked the lady we were meeting with, like, why is it so busy? It's always this busy. And she said, no, it's just the overflow from the NHS.
Yeah.
The NHS can't cope and they're going private. Yeah. And then we asked her about the scale of waste in there, and they spent $500,000 a year on disposing of waste. And you think, wow, the budgets that they're dealing with in terms of...
That's probably tall, right? Yeah, yeah, it's mad. I mean, yeah, I was at a science park the other day and they said they got through, I think it was like 2 to 3 tons of hazardous waste every week during COVID or something.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that because I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was hundreds of tons a year that they were getting through of just, you know, hazardous waste. Yeah, it was madness.
Yeah, so, it's crazy. Okay. Well, that leads us nicely actually to what you do and where do you do it.
Yeah. So my role is, I'm now the MD of Econics. We are the sole manufacturer supplier of these. It's called a biobin. It's a clinical waste container made 96% from paper. They arrive fold flat like this. Inside every single one, we've got a biomat. So you can see we've got an absorbent pad. They all have a temporary seal. So if anyone's on their bench or at a station and they're worried about their bin getting knocked over, they've all got a temporary seal. And when you want to seal them up finally, they've got a sticky strip, which you just pull back and stick down on the tabs on the side, and it will seal it up. I'll probably just demonstrate that. Just so you can see it. Yeah, there's the temporary seal, and then if you want to peel it off, you just peel that back and stick it down, and it looks like a nice kind of takeaway card that you might get, but I wouldn't obviously recommend eating anything inside it. I'm the MD of this. It's a family-run business, so there's only 8 of us in the company. My dad used to run it, and he'd been running it for kind of 15, 20 years, and then I spent about 10 and a half years working in technology. Worked for a big company called IBM, and I found myself doing lots of IT projects for, you know, oil companies, for cigarette companies, for companies that I guess contributed maybe not so positively to the environment. And I also found myself sitting basically 10 hours a day in front of a laptop, you know, hunched over like this, trying to just in Zoom meetings constantly. Then my days were just meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. And quite frankly, I was bored of sitting in meetings and talking to people and, you know, trying to run projects to help these oil companies and cigarette companies sell more cigarettes or optimize their marketing or, you know, help oil companies do whatever. And I thought I could do something better. And at the same time, my dad, he was really interested in maybe trying to exit the business because he's now, what is he, 66. He kind of wants to, you know, go on with his life and do a lot of traveling and stuff. So, you know, I went to him and said, look, what do you want to do? And he said, well, I'm looking at maybe trying to wind it up in the next few years. I said, well, why don't I come and, you know, come work for you for a bit? And then maybe I can buy it off you at some point. And it's worked out really well. I went on a, you know, I left IBM and then started here, and it's worked brilliantly, and I really love what I do. Team's fantastic, the product's brilliant, I found a real kind of, I guess, love for doing something which isn't just about, you know, the product. It's about doing something positive for the environment as well, positive, which makes me feel really good. So
It's no secret we're a fan of the bio bin. Numerous ways. It's not just the reduction in plastic that it helps. Flat pack, more to a pallet, fewer deliveries, longer time between deliveries. Brilliant. So that was going to be one of my questions.
You're hanging for a job, Alex. You're very welcome, whenever you want.
I've already got a job.
It's true, yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge so far?
I think adapting from life in a big company to a small company for me. So, and a new industry. So, you know, I was in IT. I was selling and working on big e-commerce implementations, you know, big digital marketing campaign stuff, you know, Salesforce, Adobe, SAP, all the big ones. And where there's lots of process, there's lots of, you know, bureaucracy, red tape, or you can't do this, you can't go to that customer, you've got to go through the account manager, you can't send this email, you can't talk to this person. I can do what I want here. You know, within reason, obviously, but there's, you know, if I need to talk to a customer about a product or I've got something exciting, I don't need to go to an account manager to go, can I just, you know, and there's not an account strategy or whatever. It's, I pick up the phone, I say, hello, you know, how are you getting on with your products? Is there anything, you know, we can help you with? Oh, by the way, we've got a new product here that's coming out, or, you know, whatever it might be. There's no process that takes a long time. It's much more agile, which I really enjoy. And I found that's kind of the biggest challenge for me, along with also adapting to a new industry. So, you know, before I was in tech, but now it's clinical waste and, you know, waste. And the different colours of the bins. What do they all mean? Waste codes, you know, how is waste disposed of? What's an autoclave? Never even had a clue about what that was. So I guess there's been a really steep learning curve for me in terms of the industry and how these bins can really fit in, which I've had to do in a very short space of time. So, that's been a big challenge as well.
And you were at the point where you couldn't go back to work?
100%, yeah.
It doesn't take longer than
that. No, it doesn't. I would say I work more now than I did when I worked for someone else.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But I also love it a lot more. And you know, it's just exciting. You know, every day I get excited by, you know, new customer or, you know, a challenge which I can solve personally and, you know, and help someone.
Yeah.
And building partnerships, building relationships that I can do, and I think you know, with my team as well, I think that's kind of the key thing, really. I don't want to work for anyone else again. I want to do my thing. You get so much hype there.
Yeah. You learn a lot quicker.
You do, yeah. If you make a mistake, ultimately you're going to suffer as well. And you know, it's not the shareholders in the distance somewhere that might suffer. And you know, of course, the projects I was working on at IBM were, you know, they were kind of a few million here or there, but in the grand scheme of things, in a, you know, $80 to $90 billion company, it's actually tiny. You're a very small fish in a very big ocean.
Yeah.
Here, I'm a very big fish in a very small pond. So it's kind of different way of thinking about it in the company. But yeah, I'm good about that.
I think it's testament to how good the product is, how much you see it out in the market, on TV as well. You know, anyone who's getting interviewed in a lab in the NHS, you see a bin, or in a lab in, you know, a biotech in Oxford, you see a bin in the background. They stand out really nicely. If we capture on the camera here, but that's testament to your team as well, because any interview, and maybe your distributors as well, you must have a good network of distributors, UK and globally, but it is such a fantastic product that it's a bit of one of those no-brainer products for me. When you talk to a customer about it, if they possibly can buy it because they haven't got a contract in place or there's something prohibiting it, they will move to it. Mm. Alex has touched on, you know, some of the benefits. Can you just talk to us about the actual carbon savings of your product? How does it actually sort of work out per bin or whatever?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we've always said about our products is they're better for the environment. But until kind of the last couple of years, we've never really had any hardcore proof of that. So what we did is we worked with an agency who are really good. They're called Blue Marble. And what they do is they map out and do life cycle assessments and carbon footprint analysis of products. And we got a full life cycle analysis done for our 5-litre bin, 6-litre pipette bin, and our big 30-litre bin. Now, what this measures is what they call cradle to grave. So a lot of these LCAs, as they call them, life cycle assessments, they will measure cradle to gate, which means all the inputs into the product. So let's take this keyboard, for instance, right? It might be, okay, all of these keys, where have they come from? What are they made from? The outer case, what's that made from? These rubber things here, what's that made from? Where does it come from? How far has it traveled to get from its source, whatever material it's made of, to the factory where it's then made? What machines are they using to make that particular part? How are they powered? Is it powered from the grid? Is it solar power? Is it this, that, and the other? When it's then made, how far is it traveling to its end destination to then get, you know, put together in this keyboard? Or the little stickers, where do they come from? How is it packed? You know, where is it shipped from? I mean, you wouldn't believe the level of detail that they go into on these things to really make sure that no stone is unturned with the carbon assessment. Now, luckily for our bins, there's only like four parts in them, so it wasn't that difficult to bring all the bits together. And that also, I guess, works out in terms of the cost of these things, because they can be really expensive. You think about a computer or a fridge or an analyzer or whatever it might be in a lab, they have hundreds of thousands of bits, and you've got to work out each one of those bits, where's it coming from, where's it manufactured, what's it made from, what's the carbon footprint of all that. That could take a long time and be very costly. So they basically went and took, where's this paper made? Where's it come from? How far has it traveled? The temporary seal, where's that come from? What's it made of, the material? And they, in the factory where it's made, what are the machines using? So what's their power output? Is it taking electricity from the grid? All this kind of stuff. And they analyze it, and then they said, okay, well, we've got the product. Where is it being shipped from and to? And then they did it from the manufacturing location to our warehouse. And then they measured from our warehouse to the individual hospitals, roughly, or labs, whatever. And then at that point, you can't measure the usage inside a facility, because you can't say, well, at hospital X, they put a pallet of these by the goods received, and then it gets transported by electric truck to a ward or whatever. You can't measure that because you just don't know. So that's excluded. But then included as well is the incineration of the bin. So all the bins, plastic or bags or whatever, will all, mostly in this industry, get incinerated at the end. That was included in the study. So the numbers we have include the incineration, which is quite rare as well. People don't like to do that because, that's quite a lot of carbon a lot of the time. And the numbers were great. So the 5 litre, which is the purple one behind you, that has a carbon footprint of 180 grams. So, and it's like, how much is 180 grams? Well, that's a good question. Yeah. So if I compare it to a plastic of the same weight or same size, so that's 5 litre, if I do a 5 litre plastic, that has a carbon footprint of 2.12 kilograms.
Okay.
I think it's 2.7, and then a part recycled one has 2.12. So there's basically, you can get 10 to 12 bio bins of that size for one plastic in terms of carbon, which is pretty sensational, to be honest.
Yeah.
The 30 litre, our big one, they have a recycled cardboard inner, which makes them a little bit heavier. Obviously, these are incredibly light, and that adds quite a lot to the carbon footprint, but still, a 30 litre is 1.22 kilograms of carbon. A 30 litre plastic equivalent is about 6.5, 6.6. kilograms. So again, 5 to 6 of those containers for one plastic. So Look at quite a big reduction.
Yeah, and that's huge.
So yeah, and it makes a big difference. And if you go on our website as well, you can go on and you can have a look on. We've got a carbon calculator, so you can put in how many plastic bins you're currently using at the moment. And if you put in all those data, it'll then spit out, if you switch to biobin, you could save this much carbon based on the actual LCAs that a third-party organisation has done for our products.
That's amazing. And customers can then use that for their own reporting.
100%, yeah. Customers do. And, it's really good. If you're in a lab or wherever you might be, putting together a business case for, switching the plastic to these, using that is a perfect way. You're sustainability managers and everyone really love it.
Yeah.
And all these organisations now have net zero targets, right? NHS net zero by 2040. I think 2045 is a different part of it. But there's also all your labs and places that will have net zero targets. They want to reduce their carbon. It's a really good way of
having some of that data. Monetary saving as well.
Yeah.
They're cheaper than plastic bins.
They're cheaper than plastic bins.
Wouldn't.
You tell me. They're not only that, but they're also cheaper to incinerate because they weigh less. Yeah. So a lot of waste is weighed when it's disposed of. Normally, what happens is these are put in a big 770 big bin, and that is then weighed. And so if you're putting plastic in there, then obviously that would weigh more. Now, obviously, one bin isn't going to have a whole difference in the grand scheme of things, but if you're an organisation or incinerating thousands of these a week, eventually it will. Yeah, you will be able to make cost saving there as well. So, lots of different ways you can save money and do better for the environment just by switching from a plastic bin to our bio bins.
Do you have that calculation? How much less they weigh, or is it so marginal that it's kind of?
It is. I mean, we did one case study with the hospital, and I think they saved 21p per container for a big one, so a big 30 litre.
It does add up.
Over the course of the year, I think they managed to save $13,500 just on incineration without taking into account the cost of the bin as well. So that's quite a lot.
So you're not very popular with the waste companies who charge by weight?
Actually, you'd think that, but the waste companies also like our product because it burns quicker and it keeps the fuel going. So a lot of the waste companies have what's called waste energy now. So instead of just burning stuff, putting it on a heap and then everything going up in smoke, they have these waste energy incinerators where they continually burn stuff. And they need to keep feeding the fire to keep it going. But they really like our bins because they don't clog up the incinerators as much. It's not loads of melted plastic at the bottom of it all. They just go up really easily. So actually, waste companies really like our bins.
Like it, no?
Yeah,
everyone's happy.
Everyone is literally happy. Yeah.
Okay, flipping on its head.
Yeah.
What's the most wasteful part of your business? It's not the car that you drive because you're driving an electric car, which is plugged into our charger, powered by our solar panels.
Yes, so, very good. I can't mention the car. No, it's a really good question, actually. We do try and continually make improvements to the product and to our business to try and make them as sustainable as possible. I guess one thing we've recently done is the tape on here. This is now recycled paper. It used to be virgin paper. So that, we've made a change there to be more sustainable. The next project we're looking at is currently all our outer boxes, we use clear plastic tape when we tape them up. We want to change that, and we're going to start using the recycled tape to tape them up rather than the clear plastic stuff. So we need a box redesign for that. So I guess there's small stuff that we can do to minimize waste. When we did the carbon footprinting, we looked at how much paper is wasted when we make bins, and not a lot because all our paper is cut to size, so that's really small. I'd say the biggest challenge from a carbon perspective is the transport, and working with our UPS who deliver our packages, they do have some vans which are powered by electric, which may be powered from solar panels or whatever, but a lot of their vans are still diesel or petrol or whatever. So that there's probably carbon savings that we could make there by switching to a more sustainable supplier. But even if I look at our carbon footprint data from what we did on our own scope 1 and 2 emissions, it's really, really low.
Excellent. Yeah. You've obviously joined the business at quite a mature stage and you've had to work very hard over the years to get to where it is, on design and setting up the infrastructure. And you've obviously improved things since you've been there as well. What would you think you'd be able to tell your dad when he was first setting up to help him in that? What mistakes do you think he made over the years that you've kind of spotted, and you can maybe tell him how easy it would be?
Bear in mind, he might watch this.
First thing I'd say is that my dad and I have very different set of skills. So we've actually found working together really easy because we're kind of completely different. He loves stock planning, production planning, how's the stock levels in the warehouse, he loves doing the payroll and things like that. I'm not really interested in that. I like going out and talking to customers and selling. So we've actually and he doesn't like that. So we've complemented each other really well in that respect.
It's a generation thing.
Yeah, maybe it might well be. It might well be.
Anecdotal evidence of me and my dad.
Is it the same thing? Yeah. And that works so well with me. The only thing I would say is, he's done 15, 20 years in this business without really having to do much sales. And I can see that because we went to a trade show, I think it was last year, 2023, when I first kind of started working with the company. And it was a vet show, right? And the vet, we were heaving. We were right outside the little seminar room and people were coming out, and the other sales lady, Anne, and myself were busy talking to customers. And he was just sitting on the stools, and there was buzzing, people just coming by, everyone was excited about the bins. He was just sitting there on the stool with his head down, on his phone. I think he's playing Candy Crush or something. And I'm thinking, Dad, we've got people who want to do the bins. Can you not just get up and go and talk to them? But he just doesn't want to. So I think if I was to say anything, it would more be just kind of, just drive the sales a bit more in terms of the opportunities. Yeah. But it's, he's done an amazing job, and in very difficult circumstances where 15, 20 years ago as well, people weren't focused on sustainability. He's trying to push a product where it was like all very new and
trendsetting.
Maybe in some ways more numbers, but so I'd say that more than anything, really. But no, we work really well together, and he's, I really love working with him, which is real positive as well.
Do you wish you joined sooner, or did you need to do those years at IBM to get the passion for something?
Great question. I think I needed to do some time in corporate to realise I didn't want to be there.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, and I think IBM's a great place to go and learn stuff, learn how to speak to customers, learn how to work in that world. And I learned a lot in terms of consulting, and they took me on a lot of training, and I got to do a lot of travelling there as well. I have zero regrets about doing what I did at IBM. It's a great company to work for. But I think the time was right to move across and do something different.
Yeah. Excellent.
Do you think that it's ever going to be a time when labs, healthcare, hospitals will be carbon neutral? Or do you think some element of waste is just inevitable?
I think you're always going to have waste, unfortunately. Just, You are seeing now people like, is it Recycle Lab, LabCycle, these people coming up and doing a lot of the taking the hazardous waste away, recycling it, making it something new. If we look at the upside down waste hierarchy, right, where right at the top you've got don't use, right, which is, okay, we don't need to use it, we won't use it. You're not going to be able to do anything if you don't use stuff, right? So there's always going to be something that you need to do to heal someone or to find a new medicine or whatever it is. Second thing is segregation, which is can you separate the right waste into the right buckets so that it's not just going to the wrong place and you're not recycling like you do at home, right? You get whatever plastic you've got, you put it in your recycling and don't put it in the domestic waste. That has to be perfect, right, for there to be no waste, because you have to make sure the recycled waste goes into the right buckets. There's the reuse as well, which is can you reuse something more than once? So if you sterilize it or if you do something, then you're going to be able to reuse it. But I think the core element here is just the whole cost of all of this is quite large. Mm. Like if you want to reuse something, that requires it going to be sterilized a lot of the time, which costs electricity. Well, if you're going to take electricity from the grid, to actually get to the point where that electricity is 100% renewable and it's nuclear power or whatever, wind power, whatever, for every single healthcare facility in the UK, it's going to take hundred years. I don't know. It's going to take a long time. And then you're always going to have, some element of wastage, I think. You might be able to offset some of that, but is that just kind of, fake being green? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's a reason why there is so much waste in healthcare and labs, because in healthcare, there's infection control. We have to use sterile plastic products. Plastic's the perfect solution for healthcare. It's tough, it's waterproof, it can be sterilized, it can be burnt afterwards. For labs, exactly the same. You need it to be sterile to make sure your experiment isn't compromised. And then afterwards, it's going to be hazardous, so it needs to be disposed of. There's always going to be plastic waste or waste in general in those environments. It's just, as you said, trying to reduce the impact.
100%. Just try and be as good as you can, right? At the moment, I don't think we've actually invented the perfect solution yet for all this stuff. Yeah. We're still, if you look at the advancements in technology now with AI and whatever, try not to use AI because it's in every other podcast in the world, but you've got to mention it at some point because it's such an enabler for discovering new ways of doing stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think the use of these technologies can really advance how we might be able to become more sustainable over the course of the next, 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking about the UK. If I look at abroad, there's a much bigger challenge.
Yeah.
So having been to Medica this year and spoke to people from all different kind of countries, I can tell you the UK is way and above, at the forefront of sustainability.
Exactly. So I'm trying to find reusable products in Medica.
Why would you want to reuse them?
I was speaking to a German, one of my colleagues was speaking to a German fellow who Germans typically have this kind of sense that they're very sustainable, and you know, they do a lot of their, they have these machines where you can go and put bottles into them in supermarkets and get money back and stuff. And you know, you think they're quite a sustainable organisation, but the guy was just saying, oh, why wouldn't we just use plastic? You know, why would we bother switching to paper? It doesn't make any sense. We love plastic, you know, which fair enough, but it's not great for the planet. So, but that's the challenge. And I think, you know, we can say in the UK we might get to the point where we're pretty close to being sustainable in a long period of time, but whether everyone else in the world
in the grand scheme of things, is that just a futile effort, given that we're kind of that big?
I think we can't think like that, because it may be, but we can only do our part, right? And I think part of the challenge as well is, if sustainability does cost money, right? Cost investment, you know, it's new ways of doing things. It costs research, it costs all this stuff. And so if countries don't have that, you know, cash available to invest in this, it's going to be a challenge as well.
Yeah, not always. I mean, the bins, we just touched on how they're a cost saving. Yeah. There's more and more products all the time coming out that actually are cheaper, or made of materials that are cheaper, or cut down on the process so that the overall cost is cheaper.
So you mentioned it's based on economy of scale.
The cheaper it will become.
I think the early adopters, to be early adopters, are invariably going to be paying a little bit more.
100%. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. You mentioned AI, and I take your point. You know, AI will cut down on maybe the number of diagnostic tests we need to do based on assumptions, or laboratory tests based on previous results that they can gather together and find out the likelihood of an answer. But it also uses a huge amount of energy, so you might just be kicking the can down the road.
And I actually think that's a particular bone that I get annoyed about, which is we have to fill out a lot of these carbon assessments on how sustainable is your company and whatever. One thing that is never ever asked is, how much do you rely on computer systems and AI for your work? Right, you know, the cost from a carbon perspective of putting a query into ChatGPT and then getting the answer is massive.
Yeah.
Right, if you've got 20 employees, let's say, and every day they, you know, five of them put, you know, 10 queries in there, that's 50 queries, that's huge, that's not recorded anywhere.
Right.
And that's a free service which you're directly responsible for, which, you know, won't show up on any of your carbon accounting because it's, you know, someone else's problem somewhere in a, you know, it doesn't cost you any more electricity to put it in your computer.
Yeah.
So how are companies going to measure their use of technology and AI as a way to, you know, declare that they're becoming more
common? Even down to the amount of water it uses, that was something we were talking about the other day, weren't we? That it uses a huge amount of water to cool these computers that are doing these complex AI queries. That using AI over a simple Google search isn't sustainable in the long term.
And yeah, and it's not even just that. It's like, even when I was a larger company, we got like instant messaging systems like Slack or whatever it is you're using, Teams. All this stuff uses loads and loads of electricity and loads somewhere in the cloud somewhere. You know, it's using a lot of power and a lot of carbon to fuel this stuff. So I think at some point someone needs to work out how you can incorporate that in some of the, you know, the emission statements that people are putting out.
The Royal Mail are increasing the cost of their stamps to make sure that they remain more expensive than any other method of communication.
But they're also reducing the number of second class deliveries you get. So that is also reducing the carbon of all the vans going around.
Okay, well, aside from AI, what three things would you implement tomorrow in every lab or healthcare setting, aside from the bins, of course? The bins would be number one.
I think the first thing is, it would be great to spend some time in labs and make it mandatory to do like a bit of an ideation session each year on what can we do different to, you know, focus on sustainability. What people tend to do is they just kind of come in every day and they do their work and then they go home. And we did this at the start of the year. We run like a bit of an ideation session around, right, if we were in our labs now, or if we were in this situation, what could we do different? I think making that mandatory in labs to get people thinking, so they're not just buried down in what they're doing at the moment, which I can understand can be so, you know, all encompassing. Just get their head out of that and think about the broader sense of what they're doing. I think you would get a lot more fast moving change happen, because people just get so bogged down in what they're doing at the moment. So I'd say making it mandatory to do like ideation sessions around, you know, new products and new, I guess, ways of working. Secondly, well, three things you asked for. And then these are all to make things more sustainable.
You can choose the bio bins as one if you want.
I'll choose the bio bins as another. I think, generally speaking, I'll say waste as a whole, right? Yeah. Look at your waste streams. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be always, you know, the bio bin. There might be an even more sustainable way of doing it by not using something or whatever. But really analyze the waste streams that you're looking at and make sure you've got the optimal mix of different, you know, resources that you're looking at. And then the third thing is all your consumables in general, right? So, you know, are there recycled consumables that you could use made from recycled material that's not going to impact what you do? You always have to use virgin plastic, you know, pipette tip racks or whatever you've got. Do they need to be virgin plastic? Do they need to be, can they be cardboard? Can they be recycled plastic? Whatever it might be. You know, add other plant-based material. I think looking at consumables in general and seeing how you can replace like for like with something that's not going to impact your work, so you still get the results, but has a sustainable base, would be a really easy switch, actually. Yeah. So yeah, I'd say those kind of three things.
Well, we've got an expert here, just touching on the waste part of that, which is obviously your expertise. A number of customers we speak to are probably using waste streams incorrectly. They're probably putting things in a higher grade or higher risk waste stream and paying through the nose for it.
Yeah.
Can you give advice on that, reducing it down? Because I know you do a number of bins for each level of waste.
Yeah.
Can you touch on that?
So UK, for some reason, seems to have the most complicated waste stream segregation of any country that I've ever visited. So you've got blue for your medicinal waste, purple is cytotoxic, your tiger stripe behind you, that's offensive waste, so offensive stuff, gross stuff normally. Yellow is infectious and a waste. Orange is alternative treatment, and am I missing one? I don't think I am. And so there's red, anatomical. Yeah. So there's lots of different ways that you can dispose of different ways. Even today when I was at the lab, you know, they had a red bin and they were using it for you know, some other stuff, which, you know, just bits of plastic which they didn't need to. And I saw a plastic bin on the floor and it had just you know, a bit of plastic from outer packaging gone into that. You don't need to put that in there. It's just have a think about what the different bins are there for, and each trust, each lab, each healthcare facility, whatever it will be, will have a list of you should put this kind of waste in this particular bin. And each one of these locations will also have a waste manager, most likely. If you're nervous or you don't know which stream to put it in, ask your waste manager. They will be able to direct you to, you know, put this in this stream or this in this one.
Yeah, okay, good question. A good answer, Ron.
Good question, Helen. Too bad. You might put yourself on the back.
Easy question for you. What next for e-comics?
Yeah, good question. So I think a couple of things, really. Firstly, new bins. So we have just had our 50 litre tested and approved. So the biggest one. I found that speaking to a lot of labs, sometimes they say, the bin's not tall enough or whatever. We can't quite get everything, or the 30 litre fills up too quickly, so we need a 50 litre. So we've just had a 50 litre officially UN approved, and that will that'll be coming out in kind of June, July time. We're probably going to do it in yellow to start with, and then we'll see how demand grows for other different colours. But that's really exciting. And then, you know, generally speaking, we want to continue working with sustainable products and see if there's any more complementary products out there that we can look into. Our bins are obviously for non-sharps. So, you know, we've been kind of focusing on the non-sharps at the moment, but maybe that might change in the future, you just don't know. So I guess it's just more of the same with regards to new sustainable products to help, you know, hospitals, healthcare facilities become more sustainable. Yeah,
but. And where can customers learn about what potential customers learn about your product?
This is your time to plug.
Well, you can learn a lot by coming to this podcast, because we've talked a lot about it today. But also, so our website, www.bio-bin.co.uk, we have a free sample kind of request form on there. So we always give out free samples, because the best way to try to see the product is to try it, feel it, you know, test it, put it in your lab, see how it works. So we always give out free samples to anyone who wants them. So go on there, have a free sample, and you know, see how you get on with them. And then obviously working with Lampadina to you know, purchase any bins you want. So yeah. Well,
I guess the best feedback is implementing the buy bin and nobody realising that anything's changed.
100%.
That's the best feedback you can get.
Yeah, you're right.
No impacts, and from a negative perspective, obviously a big impact from a carbon cost saving perspective. So
Yeah, it is one of those easy switches. You're just literally switching what it's made from, not how you use it and what it does. Yeah. And the implications apart from the cost. Just specifically looking at dental, obviously I work for CG Optic, and a lot of our customers hopefully are watching this, and it might be interesting if they can implement this into their practices.
Yeah.
Do you have customers using the bins within the dental industry?
Yeah, so in the dental industry, obviously you have amalgam bins as well, right? So amalgam bins and teeth with amalgam in them have to go in the amalgam bin. We don't do an amalgam bin, right? But there are lots of teeth that come out that don't have amalgam in them.
And more.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, instead of putting them in a sharps bin, because teeth can be, you know, they can be rough or whatever, what people were finding, and this is when I spoke to a dentist the other day, what they do is they wrap them in tissue or wrap them in something and then just chuck them in a bag, right? That isn't, I'd say, best practice for disposing of teeth. You could use one of our smaller bins, something this size, go on the side. Just pop your bin in there. It's not a tooth in there. It's not going to go through the sides. You know, it's a great way of you know helping be more, I guess, efficient in your waste streams in the dental practice as well.
Yeah, excellent. And outside of healthcare and sciences, it's great to see that you have products for general use within cafes and things. So you sell.
Yeah, we do. So we've got a sanitary bin, and it's proving to be really really quite popular. So. Little known, I think, in the world is that, firstly, every single place where there's a toilet which is publicly facing has to have the ability to dispose of sanitary waste in it. And normally,
both male and female.
I don't think male is 100% needed, but definitely female. Although it's becoming more and more requested. On building sites, for instance, they you generally speaking have to have one for a male and female toilets. But the rule is that if you dispose of less than 7 kilograms of sanitary waste per commercial bin cycle, you don't need to have a professional services company come in and take that waste away for you. And that can be quite costly, getting a professional services company in to do that kind of work. It can cost you hundreds of pounds a year. And sometimes in these places, you might not really actually produce a lot of sanitary waste, right? If you're, you know, maybe you're a shop which has a toilet but doesn't get used that regularly, it might not produce that much sanitary waste. And so using one of our Hygiene Plus bins, you can just pop that, they come in fold flat, just like this, space saving. People can pop that in the toilet, and then just, it's got a really neat kind of temporary seal, fold flat as well, and then it's got the sticky strip to push it down. You can put that in your normal commercial waste bin at the back, and the council will pick it up. And you won't get in trouble for it. So it's a really good way of doing it. Think about your house, right? You produce sanitary waste, defensive waste in your house, right? You know, I've got a young kids in nappies, right? We're chucking nappy waste out, but, you know, we don't need professional services to come pick it up. So it's the same thing applies for commercial properties up to 7 kilograms of waste. So, you know, it's a really good solution.
So huge cost saving.
Massive cost saving, yeah. You can save literally hundreds of pounds a year just from using our bins as opposed to using professional services.
Yeah.
Really easy. Yeah.
What's the most efficient way of buying your bio bins?
By the pallet, for sure. I think, you know, if we look at the carbon footprint of it as well.
Physical footprint.
Well, physical footprint and carbon footprint. The palletized is the best because it's only one delivery to the location. It's not multiple. You know, if you're sending out, you know, 40 boxes, each time the delivery driver's got to come, pick it up, take it to your, warehouse or whatever. If you want 40 cases, just order a pallet because it just comes in, slots in. And for that, on that one pallet, you know, if you've got, let's say, 30 cases of 5 litre, that's going to be 3,000 bins, right? Yeah. And it'll be on one pallet. Think about how many how much space would be taken up. Yeah, exactly. If you had 3,000, you know, plastic bins or dispo jars or whatever it might be. Yeah. So
that's a really good point. You basically cut the carbon footprint to the roof by 30 times.
Massive savings. Yeah.
Huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming, Dan. Really appreciate your time. So informative, and I think our listeners will get a lot out of that. So yeah, really appreciate it.
Thank you both as well. It was lovely being here. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thank you for coming all this way.
Yeah.
Thank you to our sponsors, Lek Medical for biscuits.
Thank you, Lek.
CJ Optic for the muffins. Let us know if you'd like some information on the CJ Optic range of microscopes for ENT and the dental world. Now your job is to hit like, subscribe, and the bell icon, because that means you won't miss another one.
Yeah, we're available on YouTube and Apple Podcasts and Spotify and a few others as well. So wherever you want to listen to us, you can. Before we go, Dan, any recommendations for future guests that you think would be useful?
Well, so many people. Off the top of my head, one in particular I can think of is Dr. Richard Hickson. He works for the County Durham and Darlington NHS Foundation Trust. Incredibly passionate about sustainability in healthcare. He's got some great stories. He does a lot of work with greener oceans, and it would be really, really good to have him on for sure.
And a doctor will definitely offer some gravitas to our.
Even more than you've already got. I'm not sure you could get any more, but yeah. Thank you very much for having me as well. It's been great.
Yeah, no problem at all. Safe journey. I hope your car is nice and charged.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Using green energy.
Green energy.